Welcome back, everybody, to the Precision Unloaded podcast. You're once again joined by Mark and myself, Graham. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, not bad. I'm just, for some reason, looking at my notebook, but I've also got a digital version of our thing. In this episode, we're going to talk about the AHTT Long Range Challenge 2024. We're a little bit late getting this done, but we thought we might as well crack into it. And to be honest, before we forget what happened, and talk about our sort of major event for the year. A bunch of cool stuff happened.
I've pretty much forgotten. So,
well, then you can just make it up.
Well, I think we're up to 20-something events in 5 years, so they all just meld into one.
Was it 2019 was the first year we started doing stuff? So that's 6 years. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's yes. 2024. It's 5 years ago.
Yeah, but you got to count 2020 as well.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
Math.
Yep.
This is why your data hasn't been lining up.
That's why my win calls like, suck.
All right, 18 mil, 19 mil, 21 mil, 22 mil.
I've shot five. Now you've shot six. No, I'm pretty sure it was five.
Anyway, yeah. So again, this episode is about the RT Long Range Challenge. This is our longest running competition of all the various ones we do. Again, started in 2019. Right before the semi-automatic ban, I believe. And so it was a while.
It was the catalyst.
It was. And that was the last time we seen semi-automatics.
16th of February.
Yep. That was the last event we had semi-automatics at.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember one in a case on the ground. I took photos of it. It was like a...
That was an H&K, like a rear-as H&K sniper rifle, semi-automatic, like a prototype thing. And I was going to shoot it.
That end up a collector's.
Nah, it got destroyed. And I was going to shoot it. And I thought, nah, I'll just shoot it next time because we're out of time trying to do scores. Then it got. And what I think we also had, I think Brent from Guns NZ, funnily enough, had like a JP and Grendel or something, an AR style platform. You never took much notice at the time, did we? Because it was just, whatever, it's just an AR platform and then phew, gone. But that devastating ban aside, so we've been going through.
Yeah, way back then, podium was Danny, Jeff, and Scott.
Yeah. So we've been going, and the classes were different too, wasn't it? I think we had
long range and medium range.
Yeah.
They're called.
I think medium went to a K and long range went to 1400.
Yep. And then the next year you decided to call it open and sportsman.
Yep. And then.
And the next year it was Winfield and Dunhill.
Yeah. We've been through a few iterations before we settled on things.
Yeah.
And but anyway, and the trophies used to be really big. So we kind of redid that again this year with some big but extra heavy trophies, but we'll get into that at the end of the podcast.
Yes.
But anyway, so okay, what do we do this year? So set up pretty standard sort of setup, and we've got it down pat now. You did some extra groundworks around some of our target locations, just tidying up where they sit, purely for a bit extra splash. That was much appreciated by competitors, I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
The 1K got a bit of a working over, which was nice.
I think sole reason I bought the digger, really.
It appears to be.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that definitely made a big thing during setup. A bunch of just scraping the topsoil off around the targets. There's certain areas where the bullets this get eaten up by the grass. So, and then, setup was pretty straightforward. Carl and I, we sort of a bit more formulated in how we went about it this year and got it done pretty quick.
Yeah, you're quite a routine. You basically turn up on an afternoon, there's sort of silence and driving around for a while, and then after about an hour, the shooting starts. And I thought, oh, obviously they've finished for the day. And then the next time they come out, same thing, they'll be setting up for probably an hour or so, and then they've decided to start shooting again.
But so, normally we're shooting down like pungas. So where we place our targets, we're like, oh, this is a perfect position, but the trees.
I get it. Yeah. The temptation to just start,
trimming trees,
shooting things. It's a solution to everything.
It's one of our pieces of setup kit has become a 12-gauge shotgun. It's a very efficient way of like knocking pungafrongs out of the way or rogue manuka.
Yeah.
And because my chainsaw, I had a new blade coming, it didn't turn up, so we didn't have too many options. But and then same thing, we just setting up props and stuff. There wasn't too much to do there. We built a new manuka prop we haven't like a sort of mix between a Manuka prop and a standard kind of prop, hard to explain.
That needed a trophy in itself.
It was quite popular, that, and the Carl's construction.
People said it was the greatest Manuka prop of all time. Solid as,
yeah.
It's still standing, sort of.
I know. It's
the kettle had a good go at it, but it's still standing.
It weighs about 350 kilos with all that wet Manuka.
But on my berms that I dug, right, so on the 1070 meter ones, I got the feedback they weren't wide enough. I was like, well, what do you want me to dig up the entire hill? I mean,
not wide enough. Hit the target. They were like 3 meters wide.
The whole thing is, if it goes near to it, you know, anyway. I think that's the thing. There was at least probably 2 meters either side. I thought, that's heaps.
It is heaps. They're just soft. Who is landing that far away from the target anyway? But
well, yeah. This year we had pretty benign, generally, weather.
So yeah, it was some of the... Well, speaking of the weather, it was...
Yes,
we've had a bad run of weather over the last year, be it rimfire, super steel, long range challenge was all foggy and groggy last year. So to have
barren earth was that was my worst forecasting in history. Don't worry, everyone; it'll only be gone in 2 hours, and it steadily rained the entire day and never stopped.
But so that's it. And that was the same for super steel.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, don't worry. It'll blow away shortly. No.
But anyway, we had a solid week of direct sunshine. You guys were haymaking. That's how good it was. And then so it...
we dried the ground out excellent for splash and dust. And
oh, what a treat. And then just set up. Everything was easy with the dry weather. And especially on a longer range event, having that dust is... It's nice. And so that was cool. And then, to be honest, it wasn't too hot on the day, so we didn't have to worry too much about dehydration, apart from maybe people climbing the big hill. But we got lucky both days. Oh, it was cloudy most of the day too, so for the most part. So it was good. It's better than the shit we've been having. So it's not something we can plan weather, but to have it fall our way for once, especially on this event, was pretty good, because if it gets foggy up there, it can limit your sort of visibility to 200 meters. So, and that would essentially stop that event. So, yeah, so that was good having the nice weather. And it also makes it a bit more sociable too when people aren't wrapped up in raincoats and miserable.
Yeah.
Although, obviously, a few other things to worry about, sunburn and dehydration, but people are pretty good at that. And what we should talk about
We haven't had to carry anyone away sunburned, but we did someone get cold this year at the Super Steel, even though it was in January. So
yes, we always have, not hypothermia, but people getting close to getting bad cold wise in summer, only ever in summer.
So. Getting wet, active stopping and waiting once you're standing at a stage for 30 minutes.
Yeah. So, and that's purely a summer issue. We've never had that in winter. So, but anyway, one thing we need to talk about.
People come prepared.
Exactly. Before we crack into too much, it's the event sponsors. So Suaro and Carlos come on massively for this event, as they have the last three, four years, for a long time.
Yeah.
So Swarovski, they provide essentially their full range of spotting equipment for us to use. Like they turn up with a boatload of spotting gear and tripods and the like, so... which is sort of very, very handy, especially for the Friday night, which we'll get into in a minute. But then the longer range stages on the Saturday and Sunday, we've got Swarovski glass setups for all of those, which is fantastic. And then they also provided a heap of prizes, as did Carlos Optics, and very well received. And then one of the biggest things they do is, so JP from Suaro and Dave from Carlos, they come along for the full weekend. They turn up at Friday about midday, and they essentially just ask what we need them to do, and they inevitably get a bunch of spotting jobs. They've got this wicked trailer with an awning, and so they set that up usually at the mile on the Friday and then at different stages on the Saturday, Sunday. And so huge thanks to Swarovski and Carlos, and so to JP and Dave for putting the massive effort they do in, and not just the prizes. Prizes are cool, but the extra work to help us run the matches is massive. Jeff and Cassie from the Gun Rack, as always, taking care of medals, bunch of cool prizes for the table, and anything we ask of them happens. So awesome to have, well.
Really?
Oh, and they're our podcast sponsor. We shouldn't forget the official sponsor of the Precision Unloaded podcast is Gunrack, the Gunrack. Check them out for MDT and Area 419. And then also Sims Reloading Services. They gave us some vouchers to give away on the prize table. And then also sort of recent sponsor for the last 6 months of ours of different things is whether they officially want to be our sponsor. It's the Yeranui Hotel and Bar. We went for a big dinner there, which we'll talk about later. And they laid it on for us, something fierce. So anyway, that's all sponsorship stuff out of the way. Not that it needs to get out of the way, but we got some pretty awesome support from all of them. Anything you want to touch on sponsors, Mark?
No, just, Swarovski and Carlos, basically, you know, it's their third year in person being at the event and contributing their time and talent plus all their gear. So, yeah, they're outstanding supporters and some great prizes as well. They put up for us. We didn't focus too much on getting a big prize table this year, so it was good to have some, you know, really good stuff for people to take away.
Yeah, we like you said, we didn't really aim to do a big prize table, but inevitably we ended up with still quite a substantial prize table, which was when it all got put together, I was like, oh shit, that's a bit of gear. So
it was sort of a conscious decision around we didn't really want to. I mean, a lot of with the changes with the firearms register, that people aren't selling a lot of rifles and things, so it's a bit. And economically tough times, so sort of didn't want to just lean on people for more free stuff. So
exactly, yeah, it's very fair. And then, okay, so well, while we're on the topic of setting up and all that, and then that all gets done, and we saw all the sponsorship stuff. Got nice weather, and then we kick off into Friday. So Friday we started this the long range shootout. This would be the third year or fourth year. I can't recall. Well, apparently it was the 6th long range challenge, and we thought it was 5. So anyway, we had a
2021 was the first time.
Okay. So it's the third time. Yep. So it's
actually the fourth.
You did right.
21, 22, 23, 24.
Man, you just did to me what I did to you earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That was scripted. Right, one. It was scripted.
It's one all.
Yeah, so 1K target and 1 mile target. So it's a 600mm square at a mile or 1630 something. Meters, and then it's a 300mm square at 994 meters or something, a kilometer.
So this year I redug them a week before to give it time to dry out, and that seemed to work quite well. So
yeah,
gave us good splash,
and we had the nice weather, which was bonus. Last year the weather was overcast and very windy and a little bit showery. What I would call much harder conditions. It didn't reflect in the scores. Yeah. But so shooters at the the 1 mile, what do they get? 7 shots?
Yep, 7 shots. And we cut the time down this year, basically made it, it used to be 4 minutes, I think, and we basically cut it to 3. Or was it even shorter than that? No, it was 3, I thought, yep. But actually that we had the most shooters to go through in terms of people going on the K and mile, it was like 106 different shooting people, you know, basically people lining up to shoot on both stages. So divided by 2, you know, 50 something on each stage. But for the first time, we finished well before it got dark. So that was really good. We just motored through it.
Yeah.
It was good. And people were ready. It should have reflected, though, that this year also was the first time. You pretty much, there was not many that we could see nothing, if you know what I mean. Like, you go, nah, I can't see, they're a wee bit out, and they're just going into the grass sort of thing. So this year, pretty much there wasn't anyone where we thought, no, we can't tell where the hell they're going, you know, because they're low, slightly low or something. So, because there's not a lot of room for error, even with the dirt dug out there. So, yeah, it showed. People are.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never
better understanding.
That. Yeah. And most competitors had shot it before.
Yep.
So, yeah, I didn't never consider that people could see their hits better or lack thereof.
Especially at the mile, which you obviously don't see because you're doing the other one.
But, I've never ever seen it.
Yeah. So, but, you know, there was pretty people rocking up, and we were basically, you know, we can't tell them anything for the first three shots or two shots. Yeah, so basically on the third shot, we'll say, did you see what that was or that was? But given the time, you've got to see it a mile, and the way the splash was going, it wasn't too bad. But unfortunately, people's overall shooting hasn't got better. Their ability to hit it probably was worse than last year. So last year was probably the best year we've had in terms of, just a bit better anyway, in terms of scoring and more people actually getting one or two hits. This year was a bit, yeah, bit lean.
Yeah, like, I can't talk for the mile because I haven't even looked at the charts.
Yeah.
But the 1K was it was showing up beautiful. Like, okay, I'm looking through high-end Swarovski glass where I can see everything. Yeah, I don't know why people couldn't make the connection. Maybe those subtle winds. I know I struggle sometimes in competitions with real subtle wind. But once you've seen it, you should be able to correct. But again, I can't say because I've never competed in the Friday night. But yeah. Usually at the K, what it would be is people, if they had their data good, which was probably 70% of people, and they'd land pretty well, waterline, most people, it'd be off the right side by about 0.3 to 0.4. Maybe 0.5 from center. And I'd think, oh, yeah, they've got this piece of piss. You know, and then they'd proceed to, like, maybe they didn't see it, so they'd shoot somewhere else. When I say somewhere else, I'm like on this massive, you know, it's a big giant dirt backstop. So to go, like, off the right by, like, a mil or whatever. And, yeah, and or they would correct and they would, this is just me observing through my spotter, say it lands 0.6 to the right. So they'd bring it over like 0.2. I still see it. I see it on the internet and I see it in shooting. They'll click their scope like two clicks on the wind and then they'll shoot and it moves over 0.2, you know, the same as you dialed. But really, they needed to come over 0.6 or whatever. And I'm still seeing a bit of that.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. But like mentioned, if that target was a 400 millimeter, which is what you and I normally hang at a K, the hit percentage would have been 80%, I'd guess.
Yeah, you would have had four or five people tied on five, basically, because I had some people here 2 days ago, and we were shooting at that from 918 meters, so 1,000 yards, because they were in yards. Anyway, same thing. They were, it's with hunting guns, but they were just dancing around that target. And they eventually, you know, they were determined to hit it, and they eventually got it, but it was just, you know, and if you add that extra 10 centimetres, which when I've practiced, I know it, yeah, you hit it a lot more often. So,
yeah.
It's about a third more area, isn't it? I think from memory. Yeah, that increase.
So, this may sound like a sales pitch, and everyone knows I love these things, but those Swaro 15 powers. So, I watch through those, and Darren, who always spots with me there, he's running some like 20, some other Swaro spotting scope, but higher mag. But I watched every single bullet trace, like every single one. I'm not kidding you. It was just, man, like having that tier one glass. And so I'm only on 15 and he's on a bit more zoom. So what I'd do if I was a bit unsure, because we did have one legitimate edge hit, because they seem to be far more common nowadays, but we had a legitimate one. I watched it and then I confirm with him, he's got obviously the higher magnification and it's so clear it doesn't matter. But having that glass, well, you know what it's like. We grab your old Bushnell, we're using, well, not your one, but a Bushnell spotter recently.
Yeah.
When we've been using all the Swarovski gear and it's not even, you wonder how we used to see anything, you know what I mean? So having that there was prime. Did you help at the mile at all this year or were you just competing?
You don't spend much time there, do you?
I've never been there.
No, basically, I do all the scoring and calling people up. I just sit there and...
Oh, okay. You're the Cal. You're the Cal Knox.
So, yeah, Simon spots, JP, Dave's obviously spotting as well. And I do a little bit of spotting, but in general, I just keep calling the next people or whoever's after them to get ready. And then sorting out who's not there, because we had a few people not to, you know, all that sort of thing. Just making sure the order's flowing, so, and doing the scoring, which was, yeah. So I'm just looking at my summary of the mile, basically was, on the non-magnums, there was eight people who hit it, more than, you know, either one time or more, out of 20 probably six shooters. And in the Magnums, there was eight people who hit it out of about 26 shooters. So, yeah. And in terms of multiple hits, there was only one, two, three, four, five. Four. Because, for example, yeah. Anyway, so in the non-Magnums, Anthony was first on six. And then shout out to Aaron from Australia, who with a 2-2-3 got a second round impact at a mile. And then went on to not hit it again for five more shots. So,
is he from Australia?
Apparently he is, yes.
He showed me his license. It was Vietnamese.
Yeah. He may have drifted in on a boat at some stage. We're not sure.
Wow.
But anyway.
Okay. You learn something every day. I've known him for, 8 months now, and I thought he was from a different country. Anyway, so I wonder, so the 1K, it was a similar story there. Magnum. Who won Magnum at the mile? Colleen?
Magnum? Okay, so the Magnum mile was eight hits, so there was Collie got 9 points, so every hit except the first one.
That's shit hot. That's pretty
good. Yeah. First shot, I can see where it landed, and it's like, oh yeah, so this is same as last year, and from then on he kept hitting it. So, and then Nick Shaw got five. He got a first round impact, and then battled his way to a fourth round, and that was it. But now there was, and Michael Grant was third, who was also on five, but obviously he didn't get a first round impact. So
Michael Grant got five hits.
No, 5 points.
Five points.
He got a second and third round.
Nice.
So five, yeah, and then proceeded to not get the last four. So, but you know, yeah. So, and then I think Johnny was on fourth, and then yeah, myself. But see, I shot this year because I feel like I'm waiting to the end is unfair. I shot first on the non-magnums in a mile. So, and with the Desert Tech, I got two hits, fifth and seventh. So,
with your 6.5.
Which was, yeah.
With that Norma ammo, that's good. For factory ammo, yeah. The extreme spread on that's pretty big.
So I was like, oh, that's good, because I thought, wow, people are going to hit it heaps tonight. And then we went through about eight shooters before someone hit it after me. So, but then they started getting on, yeah, well, whatever, yeah. The mile was, I shot last, and anyway, different story. I used different ammo, a different batch of ammo, and it was faster, so that stuffed that up. And
yes,
the 50 cal, I got a sixth and seventh round hit, so for two hits.
So Mark finally learnt the importance of different lot numbers and ammo.
Yeah, so we'd done our practicing, and we broke a scope mount, so we realised that was causing us no end of problems until we noticed it. So thanks to Arlington Arms, who's couriered us over a bit, and we got that fixed. But yeah, the 50 we were shooting during the week, just doing testing, making sure the speed was right, getting the new Garmin out, which kept getting blown over by the 50 cal, so no matter where we put it, it kept getting blown off its little tripod. So, but it recorded the shot, and we were getting like 2610 probably, I think, feet per second. And then coming out on the night, basically I'd pulled what I thought was similar ammo, all the same cardboard box Hornady AMAX ammo out, but it was older stuff, and it was about 40 feet per second faster. So I think Hordy shot first early on with it, and yeah, it was going way high just because of that velocity. Yeah, so, and it took us a while to work out to bring it down. By then it was, yeah, we hadn't measured the speed, so we just knew it was going high. So I think when I shot it, was up above it. Well, so wasted about the first two shots.
Lessons learned, eh?
Yes.
1K was a similar story. Good work to Steve Ray. He took out first in Magnum at the 1K. I got a first round hit, and then a fourth and a fifth or something. I don't have the paperwork in front of me. And then
I've got it.
You've got it? Was it that?
Hold on. First round, fourth and fifth, yeah.
Good work. And then in non-mag, Collie took that out again. So I think...
Yeah, 8 points. So that was first, second, and fourth shot.
Yeah.
So you missed a couple. I think that was non-mag, yeah. Sorry, yeah.
So the, obviously, the, so the, for those wondering, point scale is first round impact's 4, second is 3, and then 2, and then it's 1-1-1, depending how many shots you get, what distance. It's the same across the board, so obviously, if you get a first round hit, it's worth, you know, more than, you know, a fifth round hit, for obvious reasons, and that's how we sort of split the field up. But so good work to everyone who got some impacts. Or one thing I'll notice is over the last few years, the shit talking has reduced drastically at the 1K. Back when we first started, everyone was full of confidence, and it soon disappeared. And
yeah, basically half the non-mag K shooters hit it. So yeah, out of so, and Magnum was probably a bit worse. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, about half of them as well got a hit at a K. Yeah, or
would,
more.
Would you say that the non-people are more, their data and their usage is, with the non-mag, it's well, they're more used to it, you know? They use it all the time for match shooting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas the Magnum doesn't get used a hell of a lot currently. So people...
No, I'd say it's definitely a volume thing and data thing, therefore. So the other people just have got a huge volume, much more information on what their gun... rifle caliber's doing than a lot of the Magnum ones. Doesn't help, some of them are, they get used pretty seldom. I think they probably often turn up shooting a bit differently to what they might have been or thinking they were doing, to a degree, you know what I mean? That
and they might not get a chance to test it to a K or a mile. Yeah, fair. But anyway, thanks to you for sorting out Friday night, essentially. All I do is put the targets up. So you do all the legwork there with the organising, which is much appreciated. And everyone seems to enjoy it. We always get a good entry. Like some people say, even if you don't think you're going to win it, come along, use it as a chance to validate your data. Because
it's a good warm-up in that respect. People now do see it as, because they know they're going to have stages on Saturday that are over 1,000. So it's a good check. Where they've got head scratching problems to solve. So
yeah, agreed. But yeah, so congratulations to those who took home some medals, and then getting straight into it on Saturday. So the main long range challenge kicks off. So 2-day match, 8 stages of Saturday, 8 stages of Sunday. We try and mix up the style of shooting across the whole weekend, so it's not just a, you know, prop with a bag, blah blah blah. So we have sort of some hills, you got to climb a hill, downhill stuff, all sorts of shit, long range prone, bit of field. But yeah, Saturday is probably the more prop based. You see, you have 2 stages on what we call Mount Doom, which is a hill, but a downhill stuff, and then you head into the hay paddock. We've got several long range stages and prop stages. So 2 classes, open class and practical class. Opens, all gear allowed. Practical is up to is it 7 pound? A 7 kilo, sorry.
Something. 15 pound, basically.
Yeah, it's just over. It's 15.3 pound for your rifle setup. We've opened up the rules on bags a little bit, so you can use lightweight bags, lightweight game changers, saber bags, da-da-da. Essentially, mostly the same course of fire, apart from a couple of stages, one stage this time around. So still same target, same distances, and just a few minor tweaks. And then, obviously, the lighter gun, the non-sort of more practical weight. Yeah, so again, straight to Saturday, triangle targets. I ran a stage of triangle targets, probably one of the hardest stages of the day, looking at the lack of impacts. I thought there'd be a lot more on that. I know the time was tight, but that seemed to miff people a bit. Now, you didn't shoot the triangles, Mark. You practical shot a series of unsupported targets on that stage, which was quite difficult. Yeah. Were the triangles too small, you think?
If you need to ask me this question, Graham, you know the answer.
So the amount of people I talk to and they're like, oh, no, I was all good, but I had the wrong data dialed, or I did this or did that. So I probably could have given a little more time on it, but I didn't think – I test shot those targets not in that position but in a similar fashion, and they weren't too hard, I didn't think, from prone position.
Yeah,
but,
that's probably a point, is if the size and – difficulty, a bit more time probably would because you've got to break a pretty damn good shot.
Yeah, you've got to be somewhat careful with match flow, though, if you start putting longer.
No, I know. I'm saying, okay. But I
agree with what you're saying. But yeah, I thought with everyone's shit hot shooting, they'd be able to slam that. I think Tom and Wilkie did well on it, but
because that was a tripod, basically, was it?
No, it was prone, and then a little like a post. Yeah.
Yeah, whereas we were unsupported.
Yeah. And then,
they're practical people. Sorry. Yeah.
And then stage two was easy tripods. It's funny thing about stage two, it's the exact same stage as last year, which quite a few people did well on.
Yeah.
And then I had a heap of complaints this year from the people, several of whom cleared it last year. And they're like, oh, it was so hard. And I'm like, it's the same as last year. And I watched you clear it last year. And they're going, oh, that's right, I did too. So I don't know, maybe just they just weren't feeling it or something. Yeah, same target sizes and everything. Oh, actually, I lie. I think one target was a different size, but and not really a big deal in my opinion. But yeah. So people struggled up on Mount Doom for the most part.
I think the marker might have been a bit different location, or not really, but maybe slightly. I'm trying to think. It certainly put people into a very awkward downhill prone. If you're in the
So open class shot at tripod, practical shot at prone.
Yeah.
There is a prone position there. Your legs go up in the hill a little
bit. Oh, no, yeah. I realise that. Yeah.
But the open, it was, I thought you just set your tripod up and...
I did seem awkward than previous years and I've shot it, so that was all, but I don't know.
Probably because you're in your 50s now, Mark.
Oh, yeah, not flexible like a yogi anymore. Yeah,
ages playing the game now.
Yeah. No, I will say that the previous stage, stage one, I learnt the hard way that it's this dumb idea to... use holdovers and try and hold wind at the same time. So
for an unsupported stage, you use holdovers and wind.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Speed.
Speed. All right, fair enough.
Speed of missing. There you go.
Yeah, miss fast. Yeah, too many.
I actually changed halfway through. I said, no, bugger this, and started dialing. So, yeah. And then it was too late.
And you started hitting, probably. Yeah,
something like that. I didn't do that well.
And then long range stage is the same as last year, which again I think less people cleared this time around. Weirdly, normally the skill level sort of
two people.
Yeah, normally the skill level is always climbing up, so you normally these things get a bit more.
Yeah, we had better backstop and all that, so we did have more hits. So I remember from last year taking photos of those targets and the ones without. Because we had a backstop on the 1200, but not the 1070s.
Just to clarify for those listening, they all have backstops. It's just we cut it so it's dirt. Yeah. Instead of just
dug some dirt up around the targets.
Yeah, instead of grass. Yeah, I think I test shot that stage. So obviously, telling the story, I was match director, and hence why and Mark was a competitor. I test shot that stage actually before and after the event, and I, to be honest, found it pretty easy. Again, no match pressure makes a difference, but, 6.5 Creedmoor, pretty big targets, wasn't too much of a hassle, but again, on the day, it's not always how it goes. And then just through the year, some prop stages, a few of them had smaller targets than normal, just to spice things up in pretty tight times. And then we had a stage, so for those who've shot our prop range, we've got a series of culverts and then a series of posts in the ground, and the posts sit forward of the culverts, so you can't run them at the same time. And which is, so essentially for this match I had to choose one or the other. Am I going to run the posts or am I going to run the culverts? And the decision was made to run both of them, and it was a timed stage, so a tiebreaker, essentially a mega stage, so two targets but quite big targets, and then from each position you shot both targets and moved. Only had one complaint to me. I don't always get all the complaints to me, but everyone seemed to like the fast pace, high round count stage. And the because it's faster, the bigger target to sort of ease pressure a little bit. How did you find that stage, Mark? Stage 8, culverts and posts.
Wasn't one of my best ones, Graham. So, but no, it was good. I just didn't move fast enough and missed too often. So, yeah, back to the drawing board on that one. Considering it sits there all year, you'd think I'd get better at it, but there you go.
Well, most of the time it's just got sheep living in it that can't escape. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Design flaw.
It was a bit of a brass gobbler. Ate a few people's brass. We got Ruben to weed it, but he did a terrible job. But anyway, But yeah, I thought it was a pretty cool stage. Just one complaint about the round count. I wasn't concerned about the complaint, and I didn't take it on board, to be completely honest. But yeah, it's
Being too high for heating up rifles.
Yeah, but like, you know, shit. If people are wanting to do like to a level of overseas, when we're overseas, we did stages with higher round counts than that. Not just unlimited stages like we've done in the past in New Zealand, but like actual 18,
yeah,
trying to get 18 hits, right? And so if you're going to go overseas, you're going to see a similar thing. So I thought it was cool. And a lot of our sponsors sell barrels and stuff, so it helps our sponsors when you've got to buy a new barrel. Yeah, so Saturday, other than that, pretty standard stuff, no real issues. Went pretty smooth. We got done nice and early, like by 3 o'clock, before 3 o'clock, 2:30 or something, which was awesome. So after all this, we headed into Yirrinui, which is about 30 minutes up the road, along with, I think, or nearly all of the competitors. And we did a bit of a random draw for the sponsored prizes. We gave out the medals for the long range shootout on the Friday night. Obviously, this didn't include Sunday because it hadn't happened yet. And then we had a very, very nice dinner supplied by Yirrinui Hotel for a very, very competitive price. Big smorgasbord. And then I'm not sure if you realize, Mark, but I certainly didn't. There was a big a dessert followed after that of a similar nature, a big smorgasbord dessert. So it was very well received by the competitors, and we ended up having quite a social night, which was, I think, one of the things we've sort of been missing here in New Zealand, especially from the two-day events. So again, thanks to you, Mark, for sorting most of this out with Hordy and the Yirrinui Hotel. Yeah, I think it's worth doing going forward at the bigger events, the two-day stuff. What do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely. No, everyone liked it, so... And thanks to our friends in the West Island for showing us the way in terms of having match dinners.
Yeah, that's where we picked it up on it, right? So, yeah. And it's quite good. And it's pretty close down the road, and yeah, it's... Now with the new ownership of the Yirrinui Hotel, makes it pretty easy. So again, thanks to them for putting it on, and their team. It's well worth going. So we'll look at that again in the future. Yes, anyway, went back to the match Sunday morning, 7:30 start, I think we did. Everyone's already in the area, so it's not as if people have to travel more than 30 minutes or less, or they're staying on site. To the point, some people set up like essentially a whole house in the camping area. They got a big table and chairs and cookers and...
Yeah, we had the Brown Brothers basically had like a Glory of Ale type compound built, you know.
Yeah, Camp Brown.
Complete with a cult and everything. It's quite impressive.
So that's cool. And yeah, and then obviously get back into it on Sunday morning, crack straight back into it. So it's a different course of fire in a different part of the farm. I'm not sure which range number that is, range 5 or something, whatever, doesn't matter. Now, day 2's, this is what we call our winter range. Day 2's traditionally been like a more of a medium range match, out to 600 metres, 500, 600 metres. But we added in 2 stages in Bowers Valley. So there's been a bunch of talk over the last 6 months about bringing back Bowers Valley, which was a magnum shoot we held back in, was it 2020? Must have been 2020. Long time ago. We ran it once, decided to retire it for no other reason other than it's hard to set up and we couldn't be bothered.
December 21.
21, there you go. So we're bringing back Bowers, but what we decided to do was actually incorporate a couple of the, which are shorter range stages in Bowers, into the day 2 of Long Range Challenge, because where they are, it works out quite well. So I think one went out 1,200 metres and the other went out to about, I think, bang on 1,000. This was a surprise for some competitors because they're anticipating the real, you know, the medium range stuff. So again, seemed well received, having those nice longer shots and what I thought was 2 pretty cool stages. So that's what changed on Sunday. One was essentially a prone stage with target at something like 800 and then 1,000 and 1,200 and then... the last stage, which is stage 16, that was 2 targets and it was no prone for both classes. So practical essentially used their bipod and did a bit of a bipod seated position, which is quite cool. And then open class, they went with the tripod or the bipod and a tripod rear, which was another cool thing I seen. I didn't anticipate that happening. The couple of guys who I watched do it well, they dominated the stage, essentially. It was like shooting off a bench. They just had to. I'm not talking about you. You did okay, but
yeah. Okay. I was one shot off clearing it.
Yeah, Johnny shot it clean.
Yeah.
Like clean, no misses.
Yeah.
And again, Bowers is one of those funny areas to shoot in. It's sort of infamous for the wind being hard to get a bead on. What you're feeling is generally nothing to do with what's happening in that valley. So, and then, like, I shot it the other day before we headed off to another match, and we were down at one position, and I sort of had, like, you know, 1.5 to 2 mil of wind on, and I went to the next one along and shooting in what you consider the same-ish direction, and it was zero wind. So anyhow, yeah, added in Bowers the first time to this match. That was pretty good. The shorter range stages, we had quite a few small targets, like quite small, and they're in pretty close, you know, 200, 300 meters, and then obviously a bit further as well. But I quite like say at 180, 200 meters, I like a small target just to really make, because people usually rush those shots because they go, oh, it's 200 meters, it's easy. My gun shoots, you know, a 10 millimeter group, 5 shots, but then you put a small target, you know, and they normally struggle a little bit. I don't think they're hard to hit. I think you just got to take a few extra seconds to settle your shot. Yeah, other than that, anything else of note on Sunday, Mark?
Yeah, we reused the trench, obviously, so that was good.
So I made a mistake in the trench.
I was too short for the first point, so that was a problem. But then, you could have just moved on. I was like, okay, whatever. So.
Also, there is a bag there that can be removed for shorter people, but our very friendly
RO. You always say never do that.
No, our very friendly RO.
Do not modify anything.
That's for the short people, but he told them not to get fucked, but about as close as you can. When the short people said, hey, Graham said we can do this, and he's like, no, Graham would have never said that. But so what happened with the trench stage was it was short, long, or whatever it was, from all three positions. It was meant to be short, long, short, but I buggered up the stage instruction, so it ended up being 4 shots per position, which made it a very pro level stage essentially. So that was a typo on my part. Like, I watched someone shoot it, and I was like, why are they shooting at the long target again? And so I sort of just quietly grabbed the stage instruction, and I forgot to alter that, but hence why it was almost a little bit unachievable. But same for everyone. But that was a mistake on my part where I didn't fix up the instruction booklet. But yeah,
I'm guessing no one achieved it.
No, it's hard. It was very hard.
I do remember. I think that people were timing out with like a whole section to go. Pretty much, I think. Yeah. Well, you know, the last part of it.
Yeah, so
and by the time your squad had started and seen people do it, they're like, oh, yeah. So they sort of knew they weren't going to get there.
Yeah. But the idea being, like, you dial your first target, and your next target's like a mil hold or whatever. So you shoot the close one, which is a little wee square, and then you shoot the long target, and then, you know, short again, then move. And the idea was it was meant to be fast, but I unfortunately made it a bit too fast, so that's a mistake on my part.
Yeah. The massive Manuka prop was awesome. Stage 6.
Yeah, I liked it. I was the idea being similar to stage 8 on day 1, solid positions but with a heap of movement. So, like, the targets were big and they were a very easy transition because it was essentially like 270 meters and then, like, I don't know, 350 or something. It was essentially just behind it. So, funnily enough, it was a very easy hold, like a 0.8 or a 1 mil. I can't remember what it was, but...
Yeah.
So you get into position, shoot, and then hold, shoot, or whatever it was. Oh, no. Did you move after every... No, you moved after every shot, sorry. So there's 10 positions marked. Shoot the short, shoot the long, shoot the short, shoot the long. And because the targets were big, big for nowadays. you essentially needed to do a 10-second split to run the stage perfectly, is what I worked out. A lot of people got to like 9 out of 10. Yeah, but the last position was probably the hardest. It was on a little bit of an angle, made life a little bit hard. So you almost needed like 12 seconds for the last position. But yeah, I liked it. I thought it was cool because it's a sort of a racy stage. Bigger targets, but you've got to do a holdover. And, you know, so you've got to make sure you keep that target order. And yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. Carl, the fantastic Carl, did a good job building that.
Yeah.
Like he always does. So, yeah.
I shot Carl's bunker for the first time.
Had you never shot that?
No.
Oh, wow. Weirdly, the only shed that survives year after year on your farm without losing part of its roof, even though it's held together with sacks filled with dirt.
Too dark. I needed a headlamp. All the threats where I needed to accidentally wear my headlamp all day would have helped, because I couldn't see my heads up display when I was in there.
Does it not illuminate?
It does, but I've forgotten how to do that. I never thought of that.
Like, yeah. I don't care that you couldn't see it, but it's...
Considering I'm the only person I've seen using one for the last two matches, so...
Yeah, they died out pretty quick.
They did.
Yeah.
But I'll persist.
I know you will.
My 3 points of failure. Love it.
But yeah, it went well. We lost a few. So the event itself, we sold all the spots, all 48 spots. We had about 41 turn up. You always have a handful full of dropout in the week, and then we lost a bunch on the Saturday night due to various reasons. Getting sore, whatever. But we got through Sunday incredibly quick, which causes a bit of a drama. I've got to get like the food prepared earlier, so I'm like trying to contact my wife and patch your reception, but she managed to get out there and get all that done for us, which is cool. But yeah, we finished in really good time, which is nice, especially when it's Sunday afternoon and people have got a bit of a drive. And then, yeah, that was it. We sort of wrapped up the sixth running of the RT Long Range Challenge. And I won't go over all the results, but I believe in...
Congratulations to Anthony in open and Michael on second and Nick on third.
Yes, and then, but no one cares about that. Let's talk about the main class. And third, we had Chris, the barbecue master Brown.
Yep.
Very good stuff.
I think Alan's the barbecue master, but anyway.
Well, to be honest, I never go down there. And then in second, the new Sam O'Connor, the bridesmaid, Jeff, funny enough, from the gun rack.
LDV Phillips.
Yeah. Hey, did you see his new LDV on the weekend?
I did.
He turned up in a real fancy one. Anyway.
Fantastic vehicle. Love it.
Like domestic vehicles.
Yeah.
Let's try get LDV sponsorship for the podcast.
LDV T60.
This Jeff's either going to laugh at this or he's going to get upset that we're involving his personal career in our podcast. Yeah. All right. Sorry, Jeff, or we're not, depending how you feel about this. Anyway, so good work to Jeff. Actually, let's mention who was ahead on Saturday and had to leave due to work commitments. Luke.
Oh, yeah. We have people who shoot one day and give up.
I know. I know the reason you don't care about this, but I do. But he had like a 20-point lead on going to Saturday.
Luke falls apart on Sundays, so.
He's a really, really good dude.
Oh, he's a good dude, yeah.
And
not that that matters.
No. Okay, so back to the rest of the podium. The top step of the podium was Mad Dump Mark. Congratulations, yes. Mark. Your last victory coming 2020?
4 years, yep.
Is it 5 years because we're bad at math?
No, it's four.
At the Tirada Practical Rifle all the way back then, the average score was about 50%.
I was in the 60s, 70s.
Yeah, you were. Maybe 80. So,
no.
I didn't publish scores on Saturday night for several reasons. Some people it helps, some people it doesn't. And then...
You obviously knew it wouldn't help me.
Well, I didn't want it to panic you, because with Luke not coming on Saturday, that put Mark Andrews into the lead. And you don't do well with pressure.
No, I wouldn't have thought I was leading after day one. So
yeah.
And so
I didn't tell you. And then
if you asked me, I would have said like eighth or ninth.
Yeah. And then the same for open class. So I didn't tell them. And for similar reasons, just I didn't want to ruin their day. Because again, some people thrive and others choke. So because you have an average stage and you think, oh, that's me fucked. I fucked my whole weekend. And anyway, so I didn't tell you. But I was worried about you, Mark. But I was also thinking. Well, I was also thinking, God, it'd be good for Jeff to get a win too, right? Because it's been a long time between for Jeff and but anyway, you came out on top. Jeff bombed a couple of stages and it sort of ruined his day. And you were a bit more consistent through the day and ended up essentially getting about a 30-point advantage, which roughly 10 hits, I guess, for those.
It was 24 or something. Yeah.
Yeah, and so about a stage worth of points. And so congratulations, Mark. And you got to win the heaviest trophy I've ever made.
Yeah. Regret I have for laughing at making ridiculous size heavy trophies.
So it wasn't meant to
be about them. And then I go and win one. It's like, oh, God.
It wasn't meant to be this heavy. It was
21 kilos.
So I got this real big
21 kilos.
I got these really big scaled 6.5 Creedmoor cartridges machined. God, did it cost some money? And I ran out of money to make the bases out of aluminium, essentially. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's not. Running that stuff through a CNC is not cheap. And here's the thing. I'm not doing the CAD sign, you know. I literally give them, like, off the Nosler website, a picture of a Creedmoor bullet with the dimensions on it. I'm like, hey, man, make this. And then obviously buying the material stuff. So my way of getting the trophies finished was to use, well, the bases, at least, a piece of mild steel, some 20-millimeter thick mild steel, hence how heavy they are. But, Could I have made it out of thinner material? Yes. Why didn't I? Not sure. But at least you don't have to move it again.
No, it's not going anywhere. I got more. Alex said, try picking this up. And she goes, oh, you've glued it to the ground. I was like, no.
I tell you what, though, irregardless of weight, dense. Plenty of people wanted to win those. And,
yeah.
And you and Anthony walked away with them. So congratulations.
Thanks.
And we don't require trophies to come back. So that's yours forever, and mainly I don't want it back. I'm just looking at my trophy shelf right now thinking I would not put it on it because it would break my shelf. Yeah. and so, yeah, congratulations, Mark. What was, before we wrap up the podcast, we're just coming up to an hour, what was your setup? You took victory in practical class. So obviously you're sub 15 pounds. I'm going to guess
13.54.
There you go. So like a weight, an actual weight that can be used for whatever, right?
Yeah.
What's the gun? What's the scope? What's the brake? What's the ammo?
So I think 2 weeks prior, I'd swapped off the BNT suppressor and put TMB on it, so a muzzle brake.
How's your brain after using that?
Which was, I used it for two matches in a row and
You've thrown it away.
It's beaten the last 8 brain cells out of my head. So I've gone back to the suppressor for the intervening period. And it feels a lot nicer. But, I mean, it certainly did a great job of taming the recoil and making it very, like, you could spot, you know, pretty good. Not ideal, but, yeah. So, Desert Tech SRS and 6.5 Creedmoor, so, which means the barrel's not far out in front of you, being a bullpup. So, that's meant the awesome concussion from the TMB is nice and close. And then the scope's a Veldata G2 Mini, so that's a smaller version of the bigger Recon G2. It's excellent scope, quite used to the reticle and that and dialing. So, and because it's on the same scope with same style of scope, the Veldata's on the 50 cal and the 338. So, it makes all three are quite easy to use. So I'm very used to the reticle, although I've got to keep reminding myself of the sub tensions on that one, but yeah. And in terms of, yeah, basically just the AccuTac bipod, which I put on everything now just because it's, yeah, solid as.
Which I have with me, by the way.
Oh, you got the HD50. Yes,
yeah,
you
I have did got that. Yeah, well, anyway, another story.
With the adapter, because I went out the other day and I was like, oh, crap, he's got the adapter for the Arca on it. Anyway.
So we're getting ahead of ourselves, but you gave that to me. And I, like, start walking to shoot the Sunday, and the whole thing fucking falls to bits. Like, the adapter falls off the bipod, and I was like, what the fuck? And then I told Carl later on, he said, oh, yeah, when Mark was putting it together for you, he half did it, and then said, oh, fuck him, he can figure this out. And then it fell to bits.
Well, you put it back together, didn't you?
Yeah, of course. It was just, like, in the moment, it fell to bits.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, sorry, your gear.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then ammo-wise, I was still shooting Norma Match, and it's the older one. So I picked up some from an estate sale, which is the older Norma Match ammo, not the newer Golden Target. Anyway, the upshot of that is it shoots about 120 feet per second slower than the new stuff. So I had to be aware of that. And but to be fair, in the build-up, getting practice in, it was the data was good all the way out to a mile. You know, but pretty much I just slowed down the velocity a little to get me sorted at all ranges sort of thing. So it's probably the first time I've had that, oh, a gun like that shooting without any, you know, oddities out at a K or more. So I knew it was basically if I ranged it, and because obviously I'm using the Kilo 10K binos connected to the Kestrel, which connects to the heads up, which everyone hates, but anyway. So whenever I ranged a target, which I did on the longs, it would then, and the others I just enter the data, but yeah, it would give me bang on data. So hence why our first stage of the day on Saturday, which, you know me, if I have a good start, I normally don't fall apart too much. So I cleared, I was first shooter on the first stage and cleared the long range stage, so the 1070 and 1200 meter targets.
You might have been the only person to.
Nah, Josh did.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, in open class. So I think it was Josh, pretty sure it was. So that, and the rest of my squad shot it, and basically, you know, they got zero or one hit. I was like, oh. Because after I shot it, I thought, you know, this is a classic mark. I clear a stage and everyone else will too. So, but that, pretty much that 20 whatever 7 points whatever it was pretty much set me up, because after that I sort of shot medium, so for the rest of that day, so you know, not bad, not good, a couple of goodish ones. And who went home, was it
Luke
was basically shooting just ahead of me all day, you know, better than me all day. So then it came to Sunday. I knew that I was probably, because you and Simon were quite cryptic telling Mark, don't give up, Mark. I was like, what are they talking about? Anyway, so I thought I might have been doing better than I thought. So, and so I shot pretty consistently, got towards the two important ones I thought were the long stages. So stage 7 and 8 on Sunday, which were back out to long range again. So, and so we did 7, and Carrington was in my squad, and he absolutely smashed it. And then I was after him, I think, and just blew it out and got 2 hits or something, or maybe even 1, might have been 2. So I was like, ah, oh, crap. And so I was, and I knew, I don't know, I was trying to, I think by then I sort of knew that Jeff was potentially in the mix somewhere. Yeah. So I was always, when I saw him a couple of times, I'd say, how's your day going? And he was sort of, I don't know, you know, average, but everyone says that. But anyway, so, and then stage 8, which is near to our last stage, I actually did, after completely bombing the first range, long range stage, you know, 10 minutes later, I almost cleared that stage. So those two probably doing well on the 2 long stages of the 3. Yeah. Was pretty much got me home, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree.
Because the rest of the stages, I was sort of just mid range. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Like you said, it was 4 years after your maiden victory.
Yeah. So,
so in 2028,
yep. Or 9, depending how badly we count. But
yes, so like you said, you're like the Olympics.
Yeah, peak every 4 years.
Well, maybe you could do like a centerfire win, and then every 2 years after that, you could do a rimfire win.
You haven't done that yet.
No, you haven't.
I'd certainly then crater the next week. So yeah, down south. But we'll talk about that another day.
We will get to that in another podcast. But yeah, again, thanks to everyone who pitched in to help set up the event, sponsor the event, provide stuff for the event. Like I said, Swarovski, Carlos, Gun Rack, Sims Reloading, Urinoy Hotel, you, Mark, for all the work you do, providing us the place to shoot, digging holes everywhere. Obviously, Carl, Simon, Calvin, putting in all the time up there, Darren, all our ROs, volunteers.
Yeah. No, it's become a good calendar event, and people look forward to it, and they bring all their camping setups and various things. So it's become, just quite an entertaining weekend.
And it's well supported, which is nice. It's like you say, yeah. Times are tough and we still get good support. So that's awesome. And then, yeah, but thanks to everyone who came along. Thanks to competitors. We had a real sort of a positive attitude across the weekend. You know, even when people are having a bit of a rough time, they seem to keep it together more so than people used to back in the day with their emotions. So, yeah. Thanks, Sarah. Yeah, thanks, Simon, for doing photography too. We've got some great photography out of the event, which is always nice. And other than that, that is the long range challenge done for another year.
Yep.
And
righto.
All right.
Over and out.
See you later.